Hello, everybody. Today is March 5th, 2024, and this is a journey through history. And tonight we are discussing the book America's First Daughter by Stephanie Dree. This is a historical fiction novel about mainly about Patsy Jefferson, I think the eldest daughter of Thomas Jefferson. And it's been discussed before in other book groups, but I don't think we ever discussed it here in history. And I'll start play. I'm in charge of the recording. Brad's been traveling, so I get to do the playing of the audio tonight. And if I mess something up, it's all on me. It's not because Brad didn't give me excellent instructions. It's just because I'm still new at it, and until I do it several times or do it regularly, I'm never going to be good at it. But we'll see how it goes. I think I know what to do, but well, hopefully I won't step in it. But anyway, I don't have any introductory comments to make about the book. I don't know anything about Stephanie Dree, but we'll listen to Don. As usual, Don's picked out a good interview that I'm getting ready to play for you guys, and we'll see how it goes. So I'm gonna go ahead and start. I'm gonna let you be in charge of muting and unmuting yourselves. I'm not gonna try to do that. So if you start making noise, be sure to mute yourself. I think Alt A, at least with the Windows Zoom client, will toggle between mute and unmute. So let's give it a go here. I'm gonna try to start screen sharing. We'll see what happens.
Menu. Zoom meeting. Four meeting controls button menu. Screen. Share your iPhone and iPad. Share your iPhone or Brad Snyder instructions on Zoom screen. Type advanced tab item. Advanced tab. Portion of screen. Share PowerPoint as virtual portion of screen. Sharing not share video file. List. PowerPoint as virtual portion of screen. Share computer sound. Sharing not share computer sound. List. Sharing options list box. Sharing options list box. Select share computer audio.
You have started computer. You are sharing computer sound. Text. Speech on demand.
Okay, I'm gonna give this a go here. We'll see what happens.
I'm Anne Bocock, and welcome to Between the Covers. Thomas Jefferson's daughter, Patsy, was an extraordinary woman who, at the age of 10, following the death of her mother, began the lifelong role of companion and confidant to her father. The book America's First Daughter follows this complex woman from Monticello to revolutionary Paris, all the way to the White House. The amount of research for this book is nothing short of staggering. It's based on actual letters Jefferson wrote and received during his lifetime, and there are more than 18,000. Perhaps that's why it took two people to write this book. My guests are authors Stephanie Dree, best-selling and award-nominated author of historical fiction, and Laura Kamoy, who recently held the position of professor of history at the U.S. Naval Academy. She's also the best-selling author of more than 20 books under the name Laura Kay. Ladies, welcome. 18,000 letters?
There might have even been a few more. Those are the letters that have been digitized and made available to all Americans at the National Archives website.
Luckily, we were able to mostly make use of online resources for our research. I mean, it's a fantastic resource that these letters have been not just digitized, but transcribed so they're searchable, so we could search for things that we were looking for. We did do some research trips to Monticello, but most of our resources were either the online letters or the secondary scholarship on the Jefferson family.
Well, it may have been somewhat easier to find the letters, but reading them is not necessarily, and that's daunting.
It was at times, yeah, for sure.
But it was also very entertaining. You get to see the evolution of people over time when you read their written correspondence. And Jefferson believed that really the only true measure of a life was to read their correspondence.
He was certainly a prolific letter writer. And I think sometimes we probably forget that this is our source for our own history. What else
Absolutely.
did we have but letters? At the beginning of this book, you have Patsy, the heroine of the story, burning some of her father's letters.
Yes.
Did that happen?
We believe it absolutely did.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Yeah. Laura and I, when we were writing the book, we could almost predict when letters would be missing from the record. It was usually around some sort of scandal or difficult time for the family. And Laura, why don't you tell them how we know that those letters were missing?
So Jefferson was copious in his record keeping of letters received and letters sent. He had log books in which he noted when he received and sent letters. And he also had an invention called the polygraph, in which he had two connected quills. And when he wrote with one, it would create a copy on the second piece of paper. And so he would
Incredible.
keep copies of all of his letters. And so we can actually see from those log books where there are missing letters. And as Stephanie said, it's quite predictable.
She's burning these letters because she doesn't want a mar on a black mark on her father's legacy. That was my take on that.
We could see that any time there was going to be something very personal or scandalous, the letters would be burned. And in particular, the Jeffersons seem to have gone to great pains to disguise any connection with the Hemings family, an enslaved family at Monticello.
Let's get it straight now that this is historical fiction.
Yes.
It is certainly, but you've read, as we said, more than 18,000 letters. If anybody has the impression this is a really dry account of history, let's set that straight. It is anything but. We have scandal, we have abuse, we have, oh, it was incredible.
This is one of those stories where the truth really was stranger than fiction. I mean, so many times throughout the writing of the books, we would discover something and be like, no one would believe this if we just made it
We
up.
made it up. They would
There
not
is.
believe it.
It's just think if there had been this 24-hour cable news cycle with all this going on, we would never be off of this topic.
I think that's right.
How did you or did you take liberties with the truth?
I think whatever liberties we took in the book, we based on evidence that we had. And Laura and I talk about this a lot, but in one case, there's the relationship that Patsy Jefferson has with William Short. All we know historically is that a relationship did exist when Patsy and Thomas Jefferson's protege, William Short, were in Paris. And that's all we have. But when we laid out events of their lives on a timeline next to each other, we saw that William Short is always there at the major points of Patsy's life. And so a historian would say he was there. That's all you can really conclude from that. But historical novelists get to interpret what does that mean and how does that play out in a person's life. And so whenever we took a liberty, it was for that based on evidence or in the interest of condensing the book.
But to me, William Short was really crucial to telling of the story. And if you really were writing a romance book, which this is not, the ending would have been a little different when it came to William Short. The book starts with Patsy as a little girl. Her mother has just died. She's 10 years old, I believe. Jefferson was really thrown into a depression.
And not just a depression. The evidence shows that he was very likely suicidal, and that Patsy would have been aware of just how distraught he was. His letters at the period talk about how he wants to join Martha in heaven, that the only reason he stays is his duty to his children. His relatives are all very concerned about him, and this lasts for quite some time.
How many children did he have at this point?
Three at that point.
Had three at that point. And now Patsy, at 10 years old, becomes the mistress of the house.
That's right.
That on its own is pretty incredible, but she kept this role through her entire life.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's in part where the title of the book comes from,
Right.
America's First Daughter, because despite the fact that she becomes a wife and she becomes a mother, she's always a daughter first.
Always.
Yes.
To really, always. At some point, as I'm reading this book, I have a light bulb moment because I realize that I'm not just reading Patsy's story. I'm reading also about another woman who is having a parallel life with the same man at the same time, and it's Sally Hemings. Let's talk about that.
Well, in our book, we follow the interpretation of the Thomas Jefferson Foundation that runs Monticello and the interpretation of most historians, and that is that Thomas Jefferson carried on a 35-year-old relationship with an enslaved woman named Sally Hemings. And so we do have to explore that in the book, and we believe he fathered her children, six in all, four who survived to adulthood. And, you know, we take it from the angle of Patsy Jefferson and how she would feel about this relationship. But there isn't any evidence that survives in Sally Hemings's hand about what she thought about the relationship. So we were very cautious about attributing motives and thoughts to her.
You were. I picked up on that. Sally is the same age, just about the same age, which just really struck me. About these two young girls loving the same man at the same time in very different ways. Patsy's role started at this young age. At 15, they moved to Paris when she's 15 years old. And this is a whole new world, not just for Jefferson, but for Patsy. He is the American minister to France.
Correct. Yes.
At that point. And this is where, is this not where she learns about Sally?
Well, this is very likely where the relationship between Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings begins. Initially, Patsy is the only child who accompanies Jefferson to Paris. But then when his youngest daughter dies of whooping cough, he has to have Polly, the middle daughter, come join him. He just needs her with him. So he ultimately brings her over, and Sally is the servant who chaperones and accompanies her. And that's when the relationship begins. But Paris is absolutely formative for Patsy Jefferson. The French Revolution is beginning. There is abolitionist thought in the air. William Short himself is an abolitionist. Patsy attends a convent school and decides that she would like to take her vows as a nun, which is not something Thomas Jefferson supports or reacts particularly positively to. But it's really a formative experience.
And this is where we assume that she and William Short had some kind of a
yes,
started
right.
a
and that
romance.
Is documented. That is, there is a romantic affair that happens between them in Paris.
To me, this book was about choices.
Yes.
Lots and lots of choices. And in particular, limited choices for women.
That's right.
And one thing, if I can go back to Sally for a moment, Patsy certainly had more choices available to her. Sally Hemings had a choice when it was time to leave Paris, that she could have stayed in Paris, she could have been free.
Yes.
That's right.
But she didn't. She chose to go back to Virginia and remain a slave.
And this is one of the really interesting things about the relationship between Patsy and Sally, and that relationship really evolves over the course of the
That's
women's
right.
lives. And at that moment, Patsy does not understand the choice that Sally is making, but Sally negotiates with Jefferson to ensure that any children that she has with him will be freed, and that does in fact happen. He keeps that promise. But when Patsy gets older and she marries, and her marriage is not a particularly successful one, she comes to more understand the choice that Sally Hemings made, and there's some argument to be made that Sally's choice was more successful than Patsy's in a relationship.
You have to think through this when you're reading, though. You really have to read between the lines, did you not, when you're reading the letters that got you to that point?
Certainly. The Jeffersons are, we often say, amongst the most passive-aggressive families in
Good
American
way.
History.
Okay. Yeah.
If they are having some sort of conflict, it's not going to show up in their letters except obliquely. They prize domestic harmony. And so there is a lot of passive aggressive sort of commentary going on in letters that we did have to read between the lines.
We have to look at slavery, which becomes an enormously complex issue in this book. We have the founding father, Thomas Jefferson, principal author of the Declaration
That's
of
right.
Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Except in the 1700s, all men were not created equal. Women certainly were not created equal. And I guess they meant all white men may have been created
Well,
equal.
the definition of citizen was severely limited in the 18th century, and even many white men were not considered citizens because citizenship was largely defined by property ownership at the time. So there were many, many degrees of dependency and unfreedom, with slavery, of course, being the most fundamentally unfree position in society. And so it is hugely complex, and it's very hard to sort of, from the modern perspective, make those words square with the reality of all this unfreedom. But it's a process by which more and more people are ultimately included in the definition of citizen, and that takes all the way into the 20th century.
Absolutely. In the 1700s, we don't have the gray areas. But that was a moral dilemma for Jefferson, maybe more so for Patsy. How did you read into that?
So one of the things that gave us a lot of insight when we visited Monticello was the upstairs tour that we got to take of Monticello. Now, Jefferson's own rooms, his own suite of rooms, overlooks the most beautiful parts of Monticello, a flower garden. He has sort of blocked off the things that he would prefer not to see on his plantation. But upstairs, over his room, is where his daughter sleeps and where she starts her day. And her windows see everything that he sees, but also it overlooks Mulberry Row. And so she sees slavery, and we think she saw it in a more realistic way than Jefferson. She wasn't as willing to turn a blind eye, and we were actually sort of startled at the number of times that slavery comes up in her letters.
Seeing the issue of slavery through Patsy is absolutely revealing because it was a struggle. She, to me, was so influenced by her first love and his totally opposite stand on slavery than Jefferson. But this is a lifelong struggle through this book.
For the whole family, really.
Right. I was just going to add that even her husband, Thomas Mann Randolph, has anti-slavery leanings, and he ultimately goes on at great damage to his own political career to propose anti-slavery and abolition in Virginia. So she's always grappling with these issues.
She's written as a very complex character. She can be nothing else but a complex character. She's, as we said, intent on protecting her father's legacy, his reputation. To what end do you think she found happiness?
I think she found fulfillment. What we say is that Jefferson was the author of our independence. And so, in large part, the way we feel about him is the way we understand ourselves. And yet, everything we know about him is what she allowed us to know. So, she was aware that she was shaping a political legacy, for the Union. And we believe that she took some satisfaction from that.
I feel like her sacrifice in many ways was enormous. Do you agree? I mean, really, what she sacrificed for herself in many ways.
She did. And, I don't know to what degree she always realized in the moment that she was sacrificing, but to our eyes, her life is filled with sacrifice. And I think, though, from those early moments, she feels the duty to protect her father and to serve him and to shape his legacy. And so that is what gives her satisfaction, and she puts it above everything else in her life.
But she could do everything and at the same time, which absolutely, I mean, she had, what, I don't know how many toddlers
13
running
children.
Around.
She's 13,
13 children. She's pregnant and she's entertaining at the White House.
That's
who
right.
Does that?
We love the story that she managed as she was in her role as First Lady before it was really a defined role. She hosted a number of dinner parties, including one the night before she gave birth and one the night after. And we thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, she gets points for that. In many ways, she was an absolute trailblazer for women. There is a point, though, where she interfered with her husband's military career.
Yes.
And I had to put the book down and go, and not end well. What could she have been thinking?
Well, she was thinking that she wanted a father for her children, and she was thinking that, you know, Thomas Mann Randolph needed to be able to provide for this family, and she was thinking about preserving legacies, and
she was probably trying to keep him alive and out
yes.
of war.
And you know, the fact that she always has this mission to protect her father and the family legacy many times leads her into conflict with her husband, and it's part of the reason why their marriage ends up being quite rocky and ultimately estranged.
Well, she certainly did pick an interesting man to marry.
Yes, she did.
Not the nicest guy on the block.
Well, when we started the book, we thought that we had an obvious villain in Thomas Mann Randolph because we knew he had some alcoholism, some abuse in his life, and that their marriage was not a very happy one.
He had abuse in his life. He also perpetrated abuse on
him.
He was
right.
an abuser as well.
So we thought we knew he was going to be our villain, but as we started researching him and writing his life, we found enormous sympathy for him. He was in a really tough spot. He didn't really stand a chance. He had a difficult family. He could never catch a break. And he was Thomas Jefferson's son-in-law, and he was never going to measure up.
True. Who could? There are family stories in this book that would make a soap opera writer
yes.
think twice. And I'm really thinking about the Nancy Randolph
right
story. We have a little time, if you would tell me a little bit about that, because that was incredible.
Well, Nancy Randolph is accused of killing her baby, and then it becomes even more scandalous because it may be a family member with whom she's conceived this child, and it goes to court. And it becomes a sensational, salacious trial in which Patsy Jefferson testifies. And she's hauled into court by, you know, people like Patrick Henry and John Marshall. And we loved writing this scene because we really feel like she worked the society, you know, to her own ends and then bested them in the scene.
She did.
Yes.
She was, you know, talk about people that skate on the edge of truth and fiction. She was right there. Brave girl at that point.
And willing to tell lies
yes.
when it served broader purposes.
Even after taking an oath. Yes. Willing to tell lies. How do you rate Jefferson as a father?
So part of our joy in this book was sort of watching his evolution as a father. In his early days, when he is widowed, he promises that he will never remarry, which is something an 18th century father does not do. You remarry to have a mother for your children. But when he makes that promise, he then has to take on the responsibility for himself. And it's really clear to us that he is a man adrift. His letters to his daughters are not particularly kind in those early years. But as he comes out of his grief, he really changes, and his letters to his daughters become warmer and more playful, and whereas in those early years, he's telling his daughter, do your studies if you want to earn my love. Now he's saying things like, I love you infinitely, please write to me more, and he wants his daughters near him. So that was really a joy
so
for us to
mellowed,
see.
So he mellowed, in other words.
He learned how to become a father more in the model of a modern father.
Now, I realize this is 1700s, but what do you think about his children with Sally Hemings? Was he a father?
Well, that's a really interesting question. We don't have a lot of evidence about his relationship with the Hemings, but one of the major pieces of evidence we have is a memoir that Madison Hemings, one of the sons, writes. And he describes the children as having grown up measurably happy. Those are his words. Although he says that Jefferson didn't show them partiality or particularly fatherly affection. But then he also goes on to list some things that seem to indicate at least some partiality. Monticello was already a tourist destination during Jefferson's own life, so to get some private time with the Hemings children, particularly the boys, out of public scrutiny, he would take them to a neighboring farm, Poplar Forest, and he would spend time with them, and he taught them all of his own interests. So, they deserved more than what they got of him as a father. He never publicly acknowledged them as his children. But there were a lot of things in Virginia society at the time that circumscribed Jefferson's choices.
Absolutely. Did you take liberties with the adult children towards the end of the book?
You mean Patsy's adult children?
I mean Sally's adult children.
No, in the book we portray what actually really happened with them, and that is that Jefferson had, according to Sally's son Madison, had promised to free all the children upon their 21st birthdays. Now, the eldest two children, Beverly and Harriet, Beverly as you
Passed as
know,
white.
were allowed to, quote unquote, run away, which was a legal fiction at the time because Virginia had passed a law that mandated that if you emancipated your slaves, they had 6 months to leave the state or they would be re-enslaved. And this caused enormous conflict for the slave societies there because you would have to leave your family and everyone who could vouch for you as a free person. So Beverly and Harriet were able to escape the mountain and they apparently passed into white society. The other two children were freed under the terms of Jefferson's will. So we did not really change any of
No, you
that.
didn't.
No.
It was wonderful. I know
Thank
there's going
you.
to be a second book, and you'll come back. You'll tell us all about it. I have to tell you, this book is truly an enlightening journey into our own history, and I want to thank you for that. It is complete with secrets and scandal and an unforgettable heroine in Patsy Jefferson. The title of the book, America's First Daughter. Stephanie Dre, Laura Kamoy, I want to thank you so much. I have really enjoyed having you here.
Oh, thank
Thank
you for
you.
having
Thank
us.
you
It's
so
been an
much.
honor.
Full speed. Betsy, Brenda, Linda, Betsy, David, Epp. Video content window. Layouts and options are shown. Select the window or an app. Portion of screen share or sharing options with I share computer layouts and options. Close button. Zoom meeting. Betsy, Brenda,
Okay,
David, Epp.
are we all back now?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, I don't believe we're still screen sharing. So, anyway, okay. Did that come through okay?
Yes, it did.
Okay,
Yes, it
good,
did. It's good.
yeah, good. I think it was a good recording, I think. So Don did a good job with it. So anyway, let me see. I've lost my participant. Okay, here we go. Participants. Okay, I'll do my best to call on people. I see Don's got his hand raised again. Don, you able to unmute yourself? Okay, well I'll just go down the list as I see him. Well, Don lowered his hand, but I think he's still muted. Let's see. Okay, all right. Betsy, why don't you do you have any comments about the book?
Yes, I like the book. You can hear me, right?
Sure. Yep. You're coming through
I
loud and
like the
clear.
book.
Yeah.
I couldn't read enough of it. I think the hard part for me, though, this has nothing to do with the book, really, but the men were William and Thomas were very close to William was like a guy I almost married, and Thomas was the guy I did marry with all the uproars and anger and all that stuff. So that was hard for me. But I loved the story. They did a great job with it. And like I said, I couldn't put it down. So I had it done way before we were due this time.
Well, good. That's good. I wish I could say the same. And I hate to label books as being women or men books and stuff, but I don't know. Something about this one just seems like maybe the ladies may like it more. At least in my case. I mean, we read it for fiction old and new back in 2018. I think I read like 20 minutes of it and I said, yeah, I don't think so. And then I read about 3 hours this time just to, get a taste of it and stuff. And I thought, no, nah, I think that's enough. But anyway, okay. Well, good. Good comments. Sherry.
Well, I really love this book, and I did not reread it. I was going to, and then I just didn't have the time. But I listened to the old fiction, old and new, to remind myself of what I said before. And I really remember really liking the book, and I've recommended it to other people and stuff. And I thought it was a really good portrayal of her, and it was interesting to hear these women talk about it in the interview, what they thought of Jefferson, because I think he might have been a good president, but he was kind of a scumbag of a human being, and this book didn't impress me much with him either. So,
Now,
but yeah.
yeah, and I will say, I didn't have any problems with the way they wrote the book. I mean, their writing style was fine. It's I think I just wasn't interested in the underlying, fictional, historical fiction and stuff. But I always laugh though when I read this thing, and of course she did a good job, but it's amazing how people that are wanting to present history in a certain way, like the example they were talking about in this interview. Yeah, she burned the stuff that didn't make him look good. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that still did not make him a better person. It made the record make him look better, I guess, the historical
Well,
record. But
she
yeah.
couldn't erase his debt, and she couldn't erase the fact that he sold a bunch of, well, a bunch of slaves had to be sold when he died, and just, all kinds of bad stuff. So, yeah. But anyway, I did really like the book. It was nice to revisit it.
Oh, good, good. All right, good comments. Okay, Jana.
Okay. Well, there are parts of history where I am pretty weak, and I guess this was one of them. So I really did like this book. I can see where women might like it better than men because it was so much from a woman's perspective. But I did think the history was interesting. I didn't realize that I'm showing my ignorance here, that Thomas Jefferson became vice president under John Adams because he had the second most number of votes. I didn't know it was done that way then. And that he and John Adams were such rivals. Although I guess after his presidency, then they started writing letters and they became better friends. I guess they didn't have to worry about the competition at that point. I enjoyed learning about their time in France and the relationship with Lafayette, especially. And I think now I want to read a book about Lafayette. And I didn't understand, I didn't realize that they were in such debt. And he was so extravagant and he just really got himself into severe debt, and then other people had to pick up the pieces. So that's really about all my comments, but I really did enjoy this book.
Well, you like music. You need to listen to the soundtrack of the Hamilton Broadway cast. So
I
it
did. Oh,
uh,
I
yeah.
loved Hamilton.
Yeah,
Yes.
they talk about the second place, second place rule and that too, because because Aaron Burr was, I guess, vice president. But then when Jefferson was elected, is that right? I think he got the second most votes. I think that's right. But anyway, yeah. Well, good. Good comments. Let's see. Lynn. You're muted if you have anything to say. Okay, well, I guess Lynn, let's see. Well, I guess Lynn doesn't have any comments. David.
Well, the book was certainly interesting. I had read it earlier as well, like Sherry did, but I also checked over some past notes, and what I was reminded of was how precarious your life could be as a slave in the early 19th century or during that entire period, hanging on the whims of a white man who might need to sell you or your child or your wife because he mismanaged his finances and there was nothing you could do about it.
Right.
Recently, I read a book called The Education of Thomas Jefferson. It talked about the education system in Virginia in the 18th and early 19th century. And what stuck out to me was how spoiled the sons of planters were. They would go to college, but you went for maybe a year or two. You weren't really supposed to get a degree necessarily. You just kind of went. It was sort of what you did, but you didn't want to be too well educated. You were supposed to spend more time hunting and partying. And I thought that that was kind of interesting. They said that some of the students at William and Mary would chastise, they called them servants at the college. They were slaves owned by the college. And if they hadn't done what the students wanted, they could whip them or do whatever. It sounded like a horrible society, unless you were the very small percent on the top, and it made you very cold-blooded and callous. I would add that I've also thought of the novel Sally Hemings, which came out in, I think, 1979 by Barbara Chase Reboux, which was a fictionalized story of Hemings, which if those of you who liked this novel might want to go back on board and get that one. It's an older novel, but it's interesting because it's one of the first time somebody really tried to address the Jefferson slave thing, because for a long time, they did not want to hear that. They thought that was, that was just awful. And the family denied it, from what I've read, and that it just wasn't supposed to be. I think historian Fawn Brody finally wrote a book about it. I don't know where the descendants are now. I know they have them because I've read about them. I even read a book not that long ago about James. I think it was James Monroe, or I think it was either James Monroe or James Madison also had the thing with the slave descendants. So apparently was a lot of that going on. I would conclude by saying, if anyone likes this author, Stephanie Dre especially, she has a book coming out a week from today called Becoming Madam Secretary, about Frances Perkins during the New Deal era, which might be worth looking into at some point. Huh. And that's all.
Okay. Good comments. Good comments. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Let's see. Don, do you want to try to unmute yourself and speak, or give it another go? And Lynn, y'all are the last two that haven't spoken, I guess.
Are you host, Ellen? Because if you're host, you can unmute Don.
I can ask him to unmute. I don't think I can actually unmute him. Let me see. Let's see what it says here.
You can give him a right to unmute.
Let's see.
He'll get a link, or I mean, he'll get a notice that tells him.
It's not giving
more options for participants.
Yeah, let me try it again. Okay, I clicked the ask to unmute button, but. Yeah, it doesn't give me the choice of actually unmuting him. It gives me that choice to ask him to unmute. I assume if he's having problems doing it, I can ask him a million times. It's not going to help him. But it's Alt A, Don. If you want to try to unmute yourself, it's the keystroke. If I'm remembering correctly, is that not
it
right?
It is Alt A.
Yeah, it is. Okay. But. How are we doing on time here? Let's see here.
20 minutes.
20 minutes? Okay. Well,
about 20.
I mean, it's all right with me if we just finish. Does anybody else
have
any?
You still have one more, though.
Who have I missed?
I forget his name, but you mentioned two, but Don.
Well, Lynn Evans. Yeah, I've asked him. Yeah, I've asked him three or four times to unmute, and he hadn't unmuted yet, so I assume
he might have trouble too.
But the promo, I think the David's promo for next month is really short. So if anybody else has any, I mean, people that have already spoken, anybody else want to add anything enlightening about the book? So So they commented in the interview, you know, like I said, I didn't read the whole book. Was that guy that she was married to, Mann? Was that his last name?
Thomas Mann Randolph.
Okay, Thomas.
Randolph, yeah.
Yeah. How is he portrayed in the book? I heard one of the authors say that they ended up having some sympathy for him toward the end, but they
He
thought he
feels
was.
he can never do anything right. He'll never be what his father wanted him to be. And then he came to the point where he would never be what Patsy wanted him to be. So he just sort of gave up. And the more he contemplated that, the angrier he got, because
Okay.
he never loved his son until the very end.
I thought it was interesting that Patsy wanted to take vows as a nun, and Jefferson slammed the door on that pretty fast.
Right. Right. Did I hear in the interview they said she had 13 kids? Is that right?
She did by Thomas, yes.
Oh wow. Okay.
But
I was.
almost every year he got mad when she didn't want anymore. So then he was really abusive in all aspects of her.
Oh wow.
It was interesting to me that she could host dinners being pregnant. I would have thought back then a pregnant woman would have had to stay hidden.
That's what I
I would have
thought.
thought so too.
But
Yeah.
apparently not.
Okay.
No. Yeah.
And did Thomas Jefferson never did remarry after Martha
No.
died?
No.
Okay.
No.
No, he just had his kids by the slave. No.
Yeah.
No,
Well,
he
yeah.
promised his, I think he pro didn't he promise his wife he wouldn't remarry her?
He
She,
did, but he didn't promise her he wouldn't have more kids.
No, he
Yeah.
sure didn't promise her that.
Yeah. He was having a good old time, it sounded like. I mean,
I think
yes.
Sally, I think Sally was his wife's half sister.
Yeah,
Yes, she
but
was. She was
yeah.
related to
Yeah.
him, yes.
Yeah. I tell you.
Creepy.
Yeah, it is creepy. It's amazing. They present these founding fathers as like they're next to God almost.
Made out of platinum.
You drill down to the real story. I mean, and it's just it's always amazing what you come
I
across.
mean, even Benjamin Franklin, I still need to read the Walter Isaacson bio, had the illegitimate son who was a loyalist, and Franklin and his son had a falling out. The son was, I think, the loyalist governor of New Jersey. His name was William. Franklin was truly self-made. He later became an abolitionist, but I think there's an early episode where he might have sold someone. They did kind of present these founding fathers, as saintly, and they were human.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
No question about it. But okay, well, I'm gonna close the participants list, and I guess I'll play David, do you want to say anything about the book before I play
I'll
your little
just
promo?
mention that I was trying to come up when I pick a book, I try to pick things that we haven't discussed yet in time periods we might not have discussed.
Yeah.
Sometimes I hope I don't duplicate. I know we've been to ancient Egypt, we've been to Pompeii, we've been to Ming Dynasty China, we've visited Jesse Benton Fremont, we've also visited Stalin's daughter, we've been to early 1900s Louisiana. I've just tried to pick things we've not done yet. We've done alternate history where George Washington was captured by the British, and that never happened, but it's a type of sort of alternative historic fiction. So
Right.
I try to find things that are interesting to us and that I don't duplicate. Like I've already done several World War II books, so I won't be doing any more for a while. And I've done the one World War I book, so I will try not to do any of that for a while. It's just those two topics are very popular right now. And I
Totally.
don't like to go too far back with historic fiction because I can't always find a podcast interview. So this was what I came up with. This author has a couple of new books out already. So when we hear my podcast selection for April, remember this, that was recorded in 2022. You can go ahead and play it.
Okay, all right. I'll give it a go here. Let's see how we do here.
Hello.
Okay, let's see.
Yeah.
Zoom meeting. You have started computer audio share. You are sharing computer sound.
All right.
Speech on demand.
A second.
I'll do.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Give me a second.
We can hear you, David.
Oh, I'm
Yeah.
sorry.
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm still looking for the file. Give me a second here. Here we go.
The selection for the Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024 edition of Journey Through History is By Her Own Design by Piper Hughley, DB110548. This novel tells the story of Albert Forgotten, African-American fashion designer Anne Lowe. This designer sewed the wedding dress for Jacqueline Bouvier.
You know, you were just moving and everything was so fast.
The wedding dress that she would marry JFK while wearing. For many designers, this would have been a breakout moment. This author explores why this designer has not achieved the recognition she so richly deserves. Join us on Tuesday, April 2nd for By Her Own Design, DB110548.
In Camelot.
Full speech.
There it is.
All right. Good deal. Am I being heard?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Good. 110
548.
548. Okay. Thanks, Jenna. All right. By Her Own Design. Did I mess the name up or is that right?
Nope. That's right.
Okay. Well, that does sound interesting. And we appreciate your hard work on trying to keep it varied and keeping us and thanks for not picking another World War II kind of book, because you're right that they're
wearing that out.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what they're doing.
I thought he said there was a podcast. Is there not a podcast on it, David?
It's going to be for April. I have a
selection. You play the podcast then. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully, Brad.
Your choices of historical fiction, David.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm pulling it off now.
Yeah. Oh,
it's on Bookshare.
Oh, good.
Great.
Good. Well, good deal. Well, thanks for everybody for coming. We're going to just end a few minutes early if that's okay with everybody. But
Alan, I have a suggestion. Could someone bring Don in on their phone and he could hear it through the speaker? That way, he wouldn't have to worry about me. We do that for people on other things. I do. They bring them in on put their phone up to the speaker so they can. Hear that way.
If anybody could probably do that, Brad will probably know how, but I know
all you do is call him on his phone, the home number, and then just put your phone near whatever speaker you're using.
But would we be able to hear him talk?
Yes, you would.
Oh, because you can hear it through the phone speaker.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We do in some other stuff.
Too, if Don has a phone, even a landline, he could dial in and not mute himself at all.
Yeah,
although you might come in muted. I don't remember.
I think that's what he ought to do. He ought to dial in a regular phone and stuff.
Because he couldn't do it on the iPhone. On the regular phone, it's really easy to dial in. Yeah.
Right,
are these
right.
edited? I wondered, these presentations, I wondered if they were edited at all.
I'm not sure, David. I'm not sure who gets them and who edits them.
Right, because I was trying to get that phone call and make it go away, and I didn't quite mute fast enough.
Yeah,
we didn't hear much of anything.
Yeah.
Deal.
No, yeah.
I would just hate for that to be left in the, you know, in the recording. They're going to go, what?
Yeah.
Sorry I said anything.
I'm glad you did. No, I'm glad you did.
It's minor, David.
Yeah, it's very minor.
Three words, and that was about all.
Oh, right. Exactly. I'm glad you did. It kept me.
Well, I kind of thought you'd want to know.
I appreciated it.
It really was only, like Janice said, about three words.
Good.
So. David, have you read any of Ben McIntyre's book? He seems to write a lot of history stuff. I've not read them, but I pulled some off.
Oh, he did Operation?
I don't remember what I pulled off.
He did stuff about World War II in Britain, I think. Ben McIntyre.
I pulled several off. I just haven't read them, but
haven't either. They're nonfiction. I think Don would pick one if any of us did, because they're nonfiction, if I'm not mistaken. And I do remember one was all about several spies during World War II and how unlikely these spies were, but how important they were. And another one, I believe, was about how the special agency in Great Britain did all these dirty tricks and made it look like there were troops here and there when there weren't any. All the dirty tricks they played to fool the Nazis. I have heard of him.
I haven't read it, but someone told me about it, and I pulled off several. I ever get to do them.
I think you'll like him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess we're done.
April 2nd. That's what you said for next month. Okay. Very good. I'm looking forward to it, David. You always speak good stuff. Yeah. So
thanks
so
thank a lot.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank
everybody
you.
Take care.
Good night.
Okay. All right.
Good night.